And something that was really front of mind for me that was really unfortunate that I really, it sucked about being pregnant was that my fertility window and my athletic window directly overlap. So I had to make a decision about when I wanted to get pregnant based on my sport. And I was so thankful to be pregnant, but I also love heavy lifting and I loved competing in my sport and wasn't ready to say goodbye to those things. And I come at that from an athlete perspective, but there are so many people who really enjoy lifting from a health perspective. And so we don't want to be discouraging heavy lifting if we don't have any rationale or reason to do that.
All right, Christina, welcome to Evidence Strong Show. It's my pleasure to have you. If you could please introduce yourself briefly, that would be great.
All right. Hello, everyone. So my name is Christina Previtt. I'm a pelvic floor physical therapist who is Canadian born, but currently living in North Carolina in the United States. I teach actually for a continuing education company on the benefits or the rehabilitation process or helping pregnant and postpartum people continue to exercise during their pregnancy and return to specifically high intensity exercise postpartum. I'm a mom of two myself, and I have competed pregnant or postpartum or both in the sports of CrossFit, weightlifting, and powerlifting. And so I have over a 10-year history myself of barbell training. I have been a coach for almost all of those years, and now I am dabbling into the research space because it is very apparent that we are lacking a ton of research in the resistance training space, specifically for individuals who are going through pregnancy and then returning to lifting postpartum. And as I was teaching other therapists, the absolute hole in the literature that existed became extremely apparent. And I'm currently finishing a PhD in geriatrics, but I kind of took a little detour and did a side project around heavy resistance training during pregnancy. And that is the study that we're here to talk about today.
Okay, so the study is impact of heavy resistance training on pregnancy and postpartum health outcomes. So let's start with what was the design of the study? How did you go about getting the data?
Yeah, so a little bit of background information. Oftentimes when individuals get pregnant, there is a lot of advice that gets given around the amount of absolute amount of load that a person should be lifting. And so the advice that people are often given is don't lift more than 20 or 30 pounds. Which as a mom of two, when I was pregnant with my son, that was the weight of my toddler. So that wasn't really that great advice because of course I'm going to be lifting my kiddo. They are told not to lift on their back, not to hold their breath when they lift, not to lift overhead. And there's a lot of information that is floating around the obstetrical space and the physical therapy space. And largely where these recommendations or this advice is coming from is the fact that we really do lack data above these thresholds. So we don't really have any randomized controlled trials or any data that has gone above 20 or 30 pounds. And so especially in pregnancy where, you know, that's a very protected time in a female's life, if we don't know, the answer is no, like don't do it. So we needed information, but I couldn't go to an ethics board and say, you know, we don't have any data over 20 pounds, but I want to study these women who are deadlifting 250 pounds. Probably wouldn't go that great, despite the fact that as a PT, a pelvic PT, one who has lifted heavy during both of her own pregnancies, I see people all the time and I treat individuals all the time that are lifting heavy. And that made us think about, okay, well, the first thing that we need to do is show that individuals are lifting heavy during their pregnancy and get some descriptive data that looks at, you know, what they did, how they modified, if they modified, where their advice came from, what their outcomes look like from just like a natural history perspective. To see, okay, well, the argument that I was trying to make was, well, we got almost 700 women who answered our survey that was up for 2 weeks. There's probably a big cohort of individuals who are doing this. It's worth it to study so that we can guide them from a rehabilitation process perspective and set them up for success, not just through their pregnancy, but with respect to their postpartum return to exercise, because so many individuals are wanting to continue lifting heavy during pregnancy. They want to get back into the gym. And something that was really front of mind for me, that was really unfortunate, that it sucked about being pregnant, was that my fertility window and my athletic window directly overlap. So I had to make a decision about when I wanted to get pregnant based on my sport. And I was so thankful to be pregnant, but I also love heavy lifting and I loved competing in my sport and wasn't ready to say goodbye to those things. And I come at that from an athlete perspective, but there are so many people who really enjoy lifting from a health perspective. And so we don't want to be discouraging heavy lifting if we don't have any rationale or reason to do that. If there is a reason that comes out in the literature, then absolutely we're going to make the appropriate modifications. But, you know, as our study showed, we don't really have that justification just yet. And we need to do a lot more digging into this topic.
Okay, let's go to the results. Who answered and what did they say?
Yeah, so individuals who were eligible for the study were those that were already strength training prior to getting pregnant. I think that is an important caveat, that we didn't take individuals who had not been lifting at all and put them into a really heavy resistance training program when they found out they were pregnant. That was not what this study was. It was individuals who were lifting heavy prior to pregnancy and continued to lift at least over 80% of their one repetition maximum during their pregnancy at some time. And so we had about 679 individuals. We characterized their first pregnancy. We have, for individuals who have had multiple children, we have data for all of their pregnancies. We just haven't, that's more analysis that we need to be working on. So this is describing their first pregnancies. And then we looked at their outcomes. So we specifically asked about some of the points of advice that individuals are given. So we asked, did you continue to lift on your back? If yes, for how long? When did you modify? Did you continue to hold your breath while bracing under a heavy load, which is called the Valsalva maneuver? If yes, for how long? And then did you continue to use a weightlifting belt? Like, we asked all of these questions. And then from a subgroup analysis, we took individuals who said yes to those kind of quote unquote higher risk things that people get recommended to avoid and those that didn't, and then looked at fetal and maternal outcomes during labor and delivery. And then we also looked at pelvic floor considerations, so incidence of pelvic floor dysfunction postpartum and if they were significantly different. So kind of some of the highlights from the study that are really starting to challenge some of our thoughts is that one, we did not see an increased rise of different health outcomes for mom or baby during labor and delivery. So things like gestational hypertension or high blood pressure, that translating into preeclampsia, which is protein in the urine, which can be a medical emergency for baby postpartum, it's a medical emergency for mom. We didn't see any increased risk of gestational diabetes, as we kind of would expect. Individuals we know who are more active prior to pregnancy have lower incidences, not to say that they are immune from these conditions, but definitely conditions or incidences lower. We saw lower incidence of C-section compared to national averages. So our rates of C-section were 13% versus our current levels at about 25% in the United States. So we saw basically that, you know, there was no increased risk of adverse fetal or maternal outcomes during labor and delivery. Is important to see, is there anything that went wrong with babies? So babies were not born too big, they were not born too small, they were not born in distress. Like, our miscarriage rates were not different than what we see in the general population. So we didn't have any flags that came up from a general health perspective. That is probably one of our big takeaways. We're starting to see in females, there's a lot of cross-sectional surveys that show that, you know, rates of pelvic floor dysfunction are high around females who like to move their bodies at higher intensities, whether they've had children or not. And, you know, now we have to get out of the world of cross-sectional data and we need to figure out what to do about it. And so I feel like we have like five or six around CrossFitters and where CrossFitters leak. And I was like, okay, we know that CrossFitters leak with this. Like, now what are we going to do about it?
Let's move on.
And so, yeah, let's move on and let's try it and bust some myths. And so we did this cross-sectional survey just to get that justification. And now we really do want to try and get some longitudinal data.
Okay. How many women replied?
679.
Who were they? What sports they were from, and any things so people can get the sense what the,
yeah. So one of the interesting things, at least for me, just as a clinician that works in the community, is that, you know, a majority of our individuals, 88%, I believe, over 80% were recreational athletes. So a lot of the return postpartum we've done have characterized elite level athletes. And that is super wonderful data to have because, you know, the demands that they were placing on their body are quite high. But we have to think that elite level athletes, it's like returning to their occupation. And so, you know, we can justify potentially that they're returning to heavy lifting earlier or more vigorously than other individuals would because it's like returning to their job. And, you know, in the United States, there's 6 to 12 weeks of sometimes mostly unpaid leave. And so individuals are returning to their job quite early. And we could think that elite level athletes would do the same. So we saw that this was mostly recreational level athletes that were doing a majority. Sorry,
Christina, what a recreational athlete would mean?
So not competing at a regional, national, international, or level of competition. So individuals who either do not compete at all in the sport, but enjoy the activities for health, or do so at like a local competition level. And then we had individuals who did compete, you know, internationally and nationally, but it was a smaller cohort of individuals than the majority. And then from a sports perspective, we had the majority of individuals were CrossFit or enjoyed the sport of CrossFit. And then we had weightlifters as number two and powerlifters as number three in terms of what they would classify themselves as a sport.
You alluded to the answer, but I will ask really straightforward now. Is lifting heavy safe during pregnancy? Is it safe for a pregnant person? Is it safe for a baby?
Yes. So in an uncomplicated pregnancy, so that there is no reason why a person is on pelvic rest. So pelvic rest, meaning continue to do your activities of daily living, no penetrative intercourse, no speculum exams, et cetera, then yes, right now for the data that we have available, it is safe to lift heavy during pregnancy. And interestingly, you know, some of our data showed that, for example, urinary incontinence is very common during pregnancy. Estimates are between, you know, early 40s, like 40, 41% potentially, depending on the research study you're looking at. And we showed that the women who became incontinent during their pregnancy were actually weaker in some of their lifting. So our athletes that were stronger in the squat and the deadlift and the clean, these three big lower body exercises, were less likely to be incontinent than those that were not.
Why?
And well, it could be because they have a bigger baseline amount of strength, more reserve. So as their body is changing, their dynamic support system is a little bit more resilient to handle some of the stresses of pregnancy in combination with lifting than those that were not. That's just a theory. We would have to look at that a little bit more, but it definitely goes against the myth, right? Because we see that incontinence issues are very high during heavy lifting. You know, up to 50% of women can leak during heavy deadlifts and squats. You add in pregnancy, where all of a sudden you're in all these hormonal changes, you know, pelvic basin is widening, rib cage is widening, our biomechanics are changing. That could potentially, you know, there's theoretical, good kind of theoretical thoughts that that might be a perfect storm, that incontinence would be higher for these individuals because they have this predisposition. They have pregnancy on top of it. And our data just didn't support that, which is exciting because it can really extinguish some of these fears around some of the heavy lifting type of thoughts that go around.
Anything we should discuss about the health of the baby?
Honestly, there was nothing that really came up. Like, right. So babies were healthy. So, it, you know, we didn't really see anything that flagged on any of our fetal outcomes, no higher risk of stillborn birth, premature labor, rupturing of membranes, macrosomia, microsomia, like nothing really came up.
Okay, let's go through some of the details. So I think most people will be super interested to hear about pelvic floor health.
Yeah, that was something that was a huge interest of mine. And it makes sense, right? When we do research around exercise and pregnancy, the first thing we have to make sure is that baby is okay. Like that just makes so much sense. But I feel like we have a good body of literature that shows that exercise is safe for baby. And now I need to take care of mom. Like I need to know when I have a postpartum mom coming in, how am I going to advocate for her during her pregnancy? How am I going to advocate for her return postpartum? So one of the things that a lot of people get told, and this was my own bias, I did this too, was to avoid the Valsalva maneuver during pregnancy. So Valsalva is a lifting technique where we inhale all of our air and then tighten our belly through our core, contract everything, close our glottis and don't breathe to increase stiffness across our spine that allows us to lift more weight, right? It increases EMG activation around all the muscles in the core. It helps us to put more force against the barbell, equaling better performance because we can lift more weight. But it also creates a lot of stress on the pelvic floor and that core system, which is already under stress during pregnancy. So a lot of people say, myself included, let's switch that strategy out, continue to brace, but exhale on exertion to tone that pressure down in our midline and create less pressure on our pelvic floor. And that was one of the things that we wanted to think about in our study was, is that recommendation needed? And so we had about 30% of individuals who continued to perform the Valsalva maneuver during their pregnancies, and we did not see an increased risk of pelvic floor dysfunctions postpartum. So pelvic floor issues that we were looking at were individuals who had stress urinary incontinence, so leaking when they were coughing or sneezing, urge urinary incontinence, which is a sudden, very prominent urge to go to the bathroom that cannot be deferred, pelvic organ prolapse symptoms subjectively, so feelings of heaviness, like there is a ball in the vaginal opening or a dragging feeling around the introitus where the opening of the vagina is. And we asked about those symptoms and we did not see any increase in risk for those that continued to perform the Valsalva maneuver and those that didn't during their pregnancy. And so again, we can't really say that the way that I interpret this is that we cannot say that the Valsalva maneuver is bad. We can say it's probably net neutral. And the biggest causes, kind of my extrapolation of this, is that the biggest causes of pelvic floor dysfunction are what happens during labor, delivery, and birth. And many of those situations and circumstances are very much outside of mom's control in that moment. You know, we can't control if we have a tear or not. We can prepare ourselves for labor and delivery. We have a lot of tools to help with that. But there are, you know, things that come up when you're in that moment that are outside of your control. And so placing blame that you created this pelvic floor dysfunction because of some exercise choice that you made during pregnancy, we are now continuing to have in more and more data or a complete lack of data to say that that is true. So scaring individuals or creating a lot of judgment around the choices that people make around their exercise program during pregnancy, we don't have any data to really warrant some of those thoughts and feelings. So really the kind of bringing it down is that we really shouldn't be scaring individuals around movement during pregnancy.
Another thing that is advised against is supine weightlifting. Do you have anything about that?
Yeah, so we didn't see any risk of adverse outcomes with supine lifting either. So the reason why that is usually spoken against is because as uterus and baby grow, that supine exercise could potentially put pressure down on the inferior vena cava, which can affect blood flow and supply to the placenta, fetus, and uterus. That is a condition called supine hypotensive syndrome. Most individuals will be very symptomatic when they become hypotensive. So they're going to feel a general feeling of dizziness, just feeling unwell and nausea that comes on very quickly. And so what we see is that individuals who are symptomatic, we should prop them up, but that there because the time domain at which individuals are staying on their back, we haven't seen any risk of adverse outcomes. And that kind of goes in line with the systematic review that was published several years ago that, again, did not see any increased risk in exercise in supine. So we just kind of added more data to that systematic review to see that in our group of highly trained athletes who are lifting probably heavier they were lifting heavier than any of the studies that were included in that systematic review, we again didn't see a heightened risk of adverse fetal events.
And all the good news. That's good.
Yeah, which is all good news, right? So for the clinician who is listening to this, if we do not need to be fearful of having individuals lifting on their backs for 30 seconds, 60 seconds, 90 seconds when you're in an exercise class. It is if they are starting to feel unwell, put them into sideline, allow them to recover, and then prop their heads up when you are returning to that exercise. So if you're doing bench press, bring them into an incline bench press. If you're doing glute bridges, get them off their back, prop their upper back onto a bench and get them to come from an incline. Very easy modifications that we can make. And I've had some clients who, you know, can bench press all the way up to delivery and some who become really symptomatic at 18 weeks. It's just about modifying if they are experiencing symptoms. So I think this study really says, you know, we need to avoid these blanket statements because they're not justified and we need to cater exercise as needed for the pregnant person that's in front of us.
Any other aspects of pregnancy or postpartum I didn't ask about and you think are worth mentioning?
Yeah, so we tried to do a little bit of descriptive data around what postpartum return to lifting looked like. Again, this is a big black hole in the research space where we don't really have any data. So we at least got some, you know, averaging, which can be helpful for clinicians and gives us a starting point of recommendations to make when returning postpartum. So on average, people started getting back to resistance training about 12 weeks postpartum. I'm going to say that and people are going to interpret it as you shouldn't do any weightlifting until 12 weeks. That's not what I said. I just want to clarify the average was 12 weeks. So, you know, there's 50% on one side of the average and 50% on others. So some individuals are going to come back earlier. Some people are going to come back later. We saw individuals start to return to Valsalva-based lifting, so that closed glottis lifting around 4.5 to 5 months postpartum and using a weightlifting belt between 5.5 and 6 months postpartum. So again, that gives us kind of some timelines of an expected return because the thing my athletes want to know is when am I going to get back to the weights that I was lifting before pregnancy? And everyone's timeline is going to be a little bit different, but yes. Being able to give some guideposts or set some expectations can be extremely helpful for individuals to know, yeah, I'm going to continue gradually moving my weights up and up and up. And this is kind of when I can expect to feel okay with these types of decisions in my sport. So that was probably the other aspect of the trial that I was really interested in knowing is kind of what people were doing. And then where individuals' information was coming from. A lot of it was from fitness professionals, the internet, social media, and not a ton. Like a lot of people did discuss exercise with their healthcare providers, like their obstetrical team and with public health physical therapists, but not as many as I would like. Sometimes people, you know, don't really want to talk about exercise with some of their providers who don't know who to reach out to. So definitely something that we can be advocating for our role in the pelvic health space as allied health providers to be trying to fill some of those gaps and help to guide some of these individuals alongside our fitness colleagues, because, you know, it doesn't have to be coming from a pelvic PT. Fitness providers can be wonderful at modifying exercises for individuals during pregnancy and when there's issues coming up postpartum. But we definitely want to be part of the conversation and we can help set them up for success.
Two things. So from this study, I think it's good to see, okay, there are a lot of women who are strength training and continue to strength training while pregnant and after pregnancy. So it's possible. It's happening.
And so that's where I feel like we need to be able to give people like buoys for them to be able to navigate. You know, if you're feeling this, this, and this, it's time for us to modify or it probably isn't setting us up for success. But if you're not, cool. Because the 20 pound recommendation, I was like, if I have a person whose max that they can lift is 22 pounds, they're working at 90% effort. You know, it kind of makes sense maybe that we don't want to be working that hard. I have seen people PR or create a personal record or a personal best during their pregnancies. But if I have an athlete who's deadlifting 315 pounds and you're telling them not to lift 20 pounds, it seems a little silly, right? You're like, my capacity is, you know, 200 or 1,000, or I don't even know what the math is, percent of that. And I'm lifting at less than 10% of my capacity. So that recommendation isn't really warranted. And so again, these blanket statements aren't really that helpful. But you know, people are going to really, our healthcare providers, their recommendations hold a lot of weight. So even if they know, oh, I know that 20 pounds is really out of date, but what happens if something went wrong and they think, I didn't do what my doctor said? And so we really do have to get our obstetrical providers on board, our midwives, our doulas, our OBGYNs, like our family doctors. Like we need to all be speaking the same language. And so that's what really drove me to the research side of things to have this justification. And so I will tell my clients, you know, bring this paper and have a conversation with your provider. And you know, don't come at them very like on the attack, right? You were wrong and I'm right. It's let's have a conversation about what my body is currently capable of, what my sport looks like, and what you would feel comfortable with. And let's kind of have a conversation about it. Because I think that's the way forward.
Speaking about the way forward, what are your future plans in terms of research?
Oh my gosh, I have so many. I would love one, as I really want to get a systematic review on resistance training in pregnancy to get an idea of the state of the literature from a pelvic health perspective, not a fetal perspective. Mm-hmm. And then I would love to do longitudinal data, one where I'm taking individuals in their first trimester and really getting good descriptive statistics on how people are modifying and what their outcomes look like. And then down the road, that would be where we would start doing some RCT data around some pregnant postpartum outcomes.
Yeah, so because as soon as you know what is from your cross-sectional data, what is risky, what is not, then you can start designing this optimal, let's call it optimal leading person. Okay, your favorite color.
And what's my favorite color? So my daughter is three. And so she tells me all the time that my favorite color is pink and purple. So I'm going to have to say both pink and purple.
You can purple, noted. Where people can find you?
Yeah, so you can find me on Instagram at Christina_Previtt. And then I also own an online exercise company called The Barbell Mamas that does pregnant weightlifting, powerlifting, CrossFit programming, and postpartum weightlifting, powerlifting, CrossFit, so that you have all these considerations for your pelvic health, and we make modifications so we can keep you moving during your pregnancy and then bring you back to your community postpartum. So we try and really bridge that space by providing programming. So you can find me at The Barbell Mamas too.
Okay, Christina, thank you so much. It was a pleasure to talk to you. Very important, very important data. We're waiting for more.
I know. I gotta finish my PhD. I defend the beginning of January, and then I'll be able to dive into something new. Thank you so much, Alex. It was lovely talking to you.
Thank you.